Welcome to The Kitchen Table, a conversation about faith, music, and culture. Join Shine.fm's ministry director, Brian McIntyre Utter, and his 18-year-old son, Jake, around the table for this week's chat.
Thanks for checking in this week with The Kitchen Table. My name is Brian.
And I'm Jake.
And this is episode number 29 of The Kitchen Table.
29.
Keeps going up.
Yeah, it does.
This episode will be an interesting episode. This is probably going to be the most personal episode we've done up to this point, and I'm not going to guarantee that there won't be tears shed during this episode. How's that for a setup?
That's a good one.
I've been wanting, and we've sort of sprinkled it in a little bit, but I've been wanting to dive into this story, per se, our story, but also have a specific angle for it. And over Christmas break, I was watching a new series on Netflix called Dogs, which is basically just, you know, stories of real life stories of dogs, sort of like mini documentaries. The first episode was the training of a service dog for a girl who had epilepsy. And this service dog, it's a British show. The service dog, they go to a place, and I believe it was a British show, now that I say that.
I
don't think it was. I think you're right.
I don't think it was.
But anyway, she has to go to this training center with her family, and she has epilepsy, she has seizures, special needs, and her sister, she has a twin sister, she was told she could not bond with the dog, that the dog needed to have a specific bond with the twin sister that had the epilepsy. And of course, they got reaction from the twin who wasn't allowed to bond, and she was devastated, but she understood. And so I wanted to look at the topic of sibling guilt when you have a special needs child. Now, the reason that I want to look at this is because of our story. I'm father. Jake is my oldest son. He's 19. Our youngest son, Michael, is 9. We've mentioned Michael on the show before. Mm-hmm. Michael is classified as a special needs child. Classified before we even realized, you know, what's going on inside of his brain and his body, because he is adopted from the foster care system. So there's trauma in that situation. We have in the past 15, 16 months have been by far the most difficult in our lives because of, as Michael grows older, things are starting to manifest themselves and in different ways. And so we've gone through numerous diagnoses from ADHD to oppositional defiance disorder to intermittent explosive disorder. There are certain triggers in his brain where he rages. And so we've now learned a lot as parents to be able to understand that and to acknowledge as those triggers are happening, how to avoid those triggers to begin with, but then how to deal with it. Lots of medications, lots of psychiatrists, lots of therapists. And last November, he was diagnosed on the autism spectrum, which what would be classified as high-functioning Asperger's. They don't diagnose Asperger's anymore. They lump it underneath the autism umbrella. Mm-hmm. And so with that diagnosis, that opens up a whole nother side of things, a whole nother set of therapies. And really, the diagnosis was quite honestly a relief to my wife and I, because everything we've tried that doctors have been telling us to try and the medications that he's been on, they just haven't been able to figure it out. And so we are constantly learning and we are constantly trying to understand this.
Thanks for listening to The Kitchen Table. We're a father-son podcast talking about faith, music, and culture.
Through all of this, my wife and I have been concerned about Jake.
I know I wouldn't be able to make it through. This is a hard episode for both of us, for Mom. And I can tell that they've cared about me a lot with all of this. I've kind of diagnosed myself with anxiety for this, but the guilt that I feel is that I got to leave home. I got to get out of it, and I just feel bad because they have to live it. They have to live with just, they love Michael, and they will do anything for him, but it's hard. I mean, I lived with him for 9 years of my life, and it doesn't get easy. It's a very hard home life, and I got out, and so it's really hard to live with that. I know that God has a bigger plan for Michael and for our family, and I just really try and seek his peace whenever I get in this. It's just a hard situation all around.
One of the things that I said last year, Jake's senior year of high school, as really this is all starting and unfolding, that it really wasn't fair. It wasn't fair to Jake, his senior year of high school, that he had to deal with this. your senior year of high school, your lots of celebrations, lots of lasts. You should be celebrating throughout the year, and there was just this giant cloud over everything that took the attention away from that. And I apologize numerous times how unfair that is. Got to pull ourselves together and get through this episode.
Thanks for listening to The Kitchen Table. We're a father-son podcast talking about faith, music, and culture.
Siblings that live in a home with a special needs child, there's a lot of emotions that go on there. Jake has already mentioned the guilt factor. I've read numerous articles, and the guilt factor is there all the time. And guilt affects the siblings with special needs in many different ways. Some feel guilty because they do not have that condition. They feel bad because they have teased their brother or sister about their condition. I was reading a blog that a lady wrote who grew up in the 60s, and her brother had autism. Now in the 60s, it wasn't even a diagnosis, but he was nonverbal, a lot of unknowns in there. But she says, I quietly pressured myself to be without fault and to never give my parents a moment's worry. I never acted out or rebelled or demanded extra portions of their attention because I couldn't bear to add to their already sizable parent workload. As I grew up and entered the world, my awareness that I would have a bigger, fuller life than my brother was enormously guilt-producing. She says she's very social, had lots of friends, but she always felt isolated. And so she's read things, gone over symptoms of sibling guilt, and it's just a personal checklist to her personality. They have a tendency to downplay accomplishments. They always diverting attention away from themselves. They're avoiding drama. They're not sharing the traumatic experiences with others. They feel like they have to be the perfect child. They struggle with the impact of their sibling's disability on their lives. Because really, when you have a child with special needs, the emphasis changes. Now, in Jake's situation, your situation, you know, you're 10 years older than Michael. It was your senior year of high school, really, when all this really was kicking in. And so it was limited. Yeah. But you still deal with this. When my wife and I are dealing with Michael, it's amazing how Jake has the ability to talk to Michael in a way, same way we attempt to, but because Jake's not the authority figure, mm-hmm. he is able to calm Michael down once he's been triggered. And it's all a brain thing. Unless you have a child who is on the spectrum or a child with special needs, you really don't comprehend what parents go through. You can try to empathize, but you really can't. It's changed me because this is all new to my wife and I, and we've had to learn a lot over the last, you know, year and a half. And before, when you're out in public and if you don't have a special needs child and you see a child who is acting out and you're just like, come on, parents, get it together. I used to be like that. I did. And I was dramatically changed because of my perspective. Because that parent can do everything they can, and it's still not going to fix the situation in that moment.
I can especially relate to that one, because I used to see that, and I think I got it from you. I didn't. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Right. Well, it's just normal reaction.
It is. And that's another guilt thing that I feel, because I was like, oh, wow. I was really judgeful about that in my earlier life.
You feel guilt because of that as well.
Yeah. And also, like, now that we experience it, in that moment, you honestly don't care.
Yeah.
Because you're just trying to de-escalate the situation.
Right.
There was a situation where you and Michael were out in public, and Michael got really mad. And
we Michael, were at the barbershop.
Yeah, we were at the barber, or you guys were. And Michael had never really raged in public. We never had that situation. He was usually calm or could calm down. But this was the first time that it happened. I told mom as we were, because you called mom and I to drive over, because you were getting your haircut at the time. And I remember I told mom, I was like, I feel like I'm going into like a bomb defuse situation.
In many ways, like, it is.
You are.
Thanks for listening to The Kitchen Table. We're a father-son podcast talking about faith, music, and culture.
Well, there's many emotions that siblings of children with special needs feel. We've talked about guilt. Another one is embarrassment. Embarrassed to have friends over. Embarrassed to go out, to have a, you know, go out in public. And honestly, the isolation factor does come into play. When you have a special needs child, you have a bubble and you try to protect that bubble and you do isolate yourself. Not necessarily the most healthy thing to do, but it's out of necessity. It really is. The embarrassment, if you have a friend over, why do you have certain cabinets in the kitchen with locks on them? We do. There's a reason.
Why do you have a key to your bedroom door?
Why do you have a key to your bedroom door? Why do you have the pantry locked with a lock on it? These are the realities. And so the embarrassment of having someone over and seeing how your house has all these extra locks and how you have on average three drywall patches in the house from holes in the wall, that's the reality for many people.
I haven't experienced that one. I can relate to all of these except for that one. My friends have been very understanding about it, and I couldn't do it without them. They were my support system when I needed it.
Another emotion is pressure. Children who have a sibling with special needs often set high, unrealistic expectations for themselves in order to compensate for what their sibling lacks. Parents should be careful that their children are not pushing themselves too hard. If your child never brings home situations, children often feel they cannot tell their parents the negative thoughts that they have because they want to spare them the heartache. Other emotions of worry, fear, anger, resentment, jealousy come into play. Another thing, you know, when you do have a child who is diagnosed with special needs, we as parents, we receive all kinds of services and assistance. These services aren't routinely offered to the siblings. That's why Jake sees a therapist. We wanted to make sure that was as a part of this because you need to process this.
Yeah. I also think that with having a special needs child and just the family, get a hobby that doesn't involve autism. That's the one thing that I've been worried about, you guys, is that you don't have a life outside of autism. If mom is out of the house, she's usually at an autism support group, or she's out with coffee talking about someone who has a child with autism. It's autism 24/7, and you need a break from it. You're constantly living it. Like, you need to have something that is different, that is relaxing.
And it's hard to do that. You have to prioritize that. You have to have respite. We've been told that. In fact, our son's psychologist ordered us away last week. We had to go away for 2 days, which we haven't done in a long time, because it can affect marriages. It's very difficult. In fact, my wife went to a group recently. In that group, the majority of them were either divorced or widowed of women who have children with special needs or children with mental illness. How difficult and strenuous it is on a marriage. And so you have to be purposeful in that, and you have to find times of respite. On the other side of that, the difficult thing is that requires getting a babysitter that understands, and that's hard to find. It is. You have to find people that can provide that respite care. You can't just bring in a 16-year-old teenage girl to babysit your child because they are not trained for it. And so that makes a difference as well. And sometimes you just don't even bother. You're like, well, we can't find a sitter. We're not going
to
bother.
Thanks for listening to The Kitchen Table. We're a father-son podcast talking about faith, music, and culture.
I actually got permission from my wife to talk about this on the show this week. And she said, make sure one of the things that you mention is that as parents, we want to make sure that the siblings also have a life. And that's why we've told Jake to not feel guilty, even though he does.
That's not going to stop.
Yeah. Honestly, when he's not in the authority figure, and it's we are in the authority position, and he's brother, he has a much easier time calming down Michael when he is in an episode because he's not in that authority figure. When we're not there and he is put in that authority position, then it's more difficult. We have told Jake time and time again, it is not your job. Your job right now is to be a college student, is to study and prepare. And of course, that guilt is always there. Mm-hmm. You even said to me last week, well, if I'm at college, can you just call me and let me talk to him and see if I can? You know, that's not your job. I know you want to. I know you feel like the pressure that you have to, but that's not your job. It's important that you provide for the siblings and the families of special needs children. Psychiatrists can also play a role in the mental health of siblings. It affects siblings. Inquire about the siblings. If you have a disabled child or an adolescent patient, always ask parents if there is a sibling in the family. So this is for psychiatrists. Don't forget this. You want to talk about the effects of that child's disability on the sibling. Important issues to raise might include the rights of the siblings to self-determination, the concerns of the siblings, the expectations for the development of the siblings. Include the siblings in the definition of family. Express their concerns about the future, especially if you have a special needs child that will require lifelong care. because more than likely that lifelong care years from now will shift to a sibling. You need to improve communication, the importance of one-on-one time with that sibling, and of course, talking about that safe environment that you must provide for that sibling. Find the appropriate resources, books, online support groups, specialized medical and mental health professionals. There's actually an online resource called the Sibling Support Group. There's the Sibling Leadership Network. Obviously, this is an issue if they have these kinds of things.
Yeah.
And again, this is all brand new to us. We're just figuring it out within, you know, the last few months of our lives here. Being a sibling never stops. Siblings are typically involved in caring for a person with a disability throughout the lifespan. Remember that.
Another thing with siblings I think I really encourage is to find one person and share it. When I went off to college, it helped to have someone who had no clue, had no idea who my family was, who Michael was, who I was. And I mean, yes, I built a relationship with them first, but it was just nice to get a new eye on it, a fresh perspective, because I had been hearing from doctors, I had been hearing from you guys, I had been hearing from my therapist, who also was Michael's therapist. It was nice to get a fresh look on it.
The more people you can surround yourselves that get it and understand it and that can speak into your life, the more resources you can pull on. I'm not going to say the better the life will be. I'm saying the more chances of survival you will have, because it is surviving in many ways.
It is.
So this has been a very real, open conversation with you. And again, you probably think, what are these guys doing blubbering on the radio and talking about this?
I think this is probably the only podcast that you will find two adult men crying.
Possibly. Probably not.
I don't know.
We'll pull it together. There's some resources out there. I was amazed when I started researching sibling guilt of special needs, how many things I found, how big of an issue this is. So Google away, find those resources, get in a support group. I'm going to plug one thing in. We've talked about an organization that it's called Love Moves Us. It's in the Chicagoland area, if you're listening in other parts. And it is support groups for foster adopted families. You know, when you have foster adopted children, trauma is involved in there. A lot of special needs as well, many times. And so these support groups have been great. Just go to the website, lovemoves.us. See if there's a group near you. They're adding new groups all the time, expanding now into Northwest Indiana, which is great. Oh, was that the plug bell?
Yeah, it's free plug.
All right. Well, this wraps up the faith conversation for today. Let's talk about some music and try to compose ourselves. Okay, Music Matters is a segment where we discuss music. We're big music lovers. What we do typically is I bring a new song, Jake brings a new song, and then we'll go back in the vault and find an oldie but goldie. And so my new song is by a guy named, you might not know his name, but I guarantee you remember a band he was in.
Okay.
Elias Doomer is his name.
Don't know it.
Elias, lead singer and keyboardist for the band The City Harmonic.
Oh, okay.
Their song Manifesto, huge hit.
That was actually one of my songs in an earlier episode.
That's right, it was. About 8 years ago, that was a major hit.
Yeah, it was.
Those guys were a band up until 2017, and then they decided to call it quits. But Elias is still out there writing music and recording. He has a new song that's called Enough. And I think many times, tying in with the special needs family, you want to just have enough to get through to the next day.
Yeah.
This song has a lyric that says, "With nothing, I still have everything. Because Jesus, you are enough for me." It's a worship song. So Elias Doomer, former lead singer of the City Harmonic, song is called Enough.
Jesus, you are enough for me.
That's a good one. I like it.
Great song. He's a really great guy too.
Yeah. I just remember City Harmonic was a band. So my song for the week, it's a Christian artist, but not a Christian song, perhaps. It's by Ben Rector. Ben Rector is a big indie Christian person. I don't know how to explain his music. It's not like worship music. But he has a song called Old Friends out. This is off of his new album. His new album is kind of one of those albums that I find where it's like, there's nothing wrong with it. I love every song off of it, and I don't skip any of them. Old Friends is probably one of my favorite ones on there, and it's just talking about how life moves on, but you will never have the same old friends that you have. the cool thing about this, so for the music video for this song, he played the song and recorded it. So like the band on the album is his old high school band that is all of his old friends from his neighborhood. And that's so cool. On the music video, because he talks about his old friends, they like have arrows pointing to which person it is in the band. So it's just really cool. So here's a little snippet of Old Friends by Ben Rector.
Super talented guy. All right, so that's the new stuff. Now let's go back in time. We're going to go back to 1994. I consider 1994 sort of one of those big plateau jumps within Christian music. There's certain just years where you just saw something that swung everything up another level, and that was one of those years. This is actually the number 5 song from 1994, and this artist also had the number 4 song, but I like the number 5 song better than the number 4 song.
Oh.
He was, I believe, like a FedEx driver or UPS driver delivering packages to a record company in Nashville.
Really?
And that's how he got discovered, believe it or not.
Dang.
Isn't that crazy?
That is.
His name is Clay Cross. Don't know if you know the name.
I've recognized it, but...
Great career in the 90s, still doing music. He is a full-time worship pastor now in Bentonville, Arkansas. And this is his number 5 song, the number 5 song from 1994, Clay Cross. It's called I Surrender All.
Decent.
He's a great guy, too. That wraps up Music Matters. And it's time now for us to move into Culture Shock. All right, Culture Shock, again, we're just talking about things we find, something that's happening in our culture, and we look at it through the Christian lens and how it applies to us. Last week...
Chicago Bears.
The Chicago Bears playoff game against the Philadelphia Eagles. The last... few seconds
Let's
of the
say,
game.
Big upset.
And the Chicago Bears kicker, whose name is Cody Parkey, kicks the ball and it bounces off the upright.
And then bounces on the crossbeam and then to the ground. Yeah,
and they lose. There's video footage that shows that someone probably got a hand on it, so that can play into it.
But the thing is that the Philadelphia Eagles coach called a timeout on the first one, and he just went ahead and kicked it, and he made it. And so I'm watching this, and I'm like, $10, he misses the second one. I was just like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Well, I found a couple of different articles, blogs, that really talk about why they respect the way that Cody reacted after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
One guy who is the managing editor of FaithWire, Dan Andros, wrote an article, Why I'm Telling My Kids to Be Like Bears Kicker Cody Parkey, who was booed off the field after missing the game-winning kick. We need to be like the kicker who just lost the biggest game of his young career. Life isn't so glamorous. This is a parenting moment. It's usually filled with disappointment, hardship, and struggles. It's in these times of pain, loss, sadness, disappointment that we have the opportunity to learn and grow the most. Now, as parents, we don't like to see our children in pain, but if we neglect to prepare our children for the inevitable struggles that they're going to face someday, we're not doing our jobs as parents. The difference in how we respond to pain is what it's all about. So Cody Parker is a great example. When the world comes crumbling down, knowing where to seek refuge is critical. When the world comes crumbling down, many people turn to drugs or alcohol, but immediately after the kick ricocheted off that left upright and then the crossbar, Dan Andros, his kids responded this way. They were shocked and they showed compassion. In fact, his 9-year-old asked if the kicker would still have a job and how he would provide for his family. Now, if you watched it, you saw that cameras caught Parkey after the fact, after he was booed by the entire stadium, could you imagine, joining the prayer huddle at the center field that happens after many of the NFL games. You cannot blame anybody for crumbling in that kind of situation. But he stepped up to the microphone in the press conference in the locker room afterwards, which that says something right there. This is what he said. One of the worst feelings in the world. Continue to put things in perspective. Continue to just put my best foot forward and sleep at night knowing I did everything in my power this week to go make that kick. And for whatever reason, it hit the crossbar in the upright and I still couldn't do it. I feel terrible. Teaching moments. Some fans acted like jerks. There's a lesson there. We talk about how pro athletes, despite their giant paychecks, their endorsement deals, millions of fans, they're humans first.
Mm-hmm.
They are human beings. And when fans react that way, that's a teaching moment. That's not grounds for threatening or abusing human beings. So some great teaching moments just within that whole context of what happened. The response from the kicker and his grace-filled thoughts and his honesty, but also our response as parents into showing our children that this is the way it's done. And this is not the way it's done, the way many fans reacted. Mm. Unfortunately, now it's going to be going on, you know, for weeks because of all these memes that were created and shared all over social media, which is a sad thing.
I just think that the reaction, yes, it was a giant upset. Yes, we wanted, a lot of Chicago people wanted the Bears to go because it's been so, it was basically like if the Cubs had an upset during their World Series year. I think it was very childish in the way a lot of people reacted. There's next season. Football's not going to end. You still have another shot.
All right, that wraps up Culture Shock. And also brings a close to episode 29 here of The Kitchen Table. Thank you so much for joining in this conversation this week. We apologize for the emotion and the rawness of it. It's our life, and life's not easy.
It is not.
Many times, but we always have hope. And we always turn to the source of our hope, which is Jesus Christ.
Yep.
So thanks for tuning in. Have a wonderful week.
Adios.
Thanks for listening to The Kitchen Table on the Shine.fm podcast network from Olivet Nazarene University. Be sure to subscribe for more content delivered each week on faith, music, and culture.